This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Benign Images. Benign Images is a storyteller consulting company. Through meaningful dialogue and guidance, they help storytellers of all kinds to tell the stories that they feel they have a need to tell. Whether it's through simple editor services, consulting, or helping creatives to set up an effective work habit, Benign Images will work with you to help you become a better storyteller. Start your project with them today by visiting their website, benignimages.com. That is benignimages.com, B-E-N-I-G-N, images.com. Go check them out. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Today, we're going live with Ryan Fellman, aka Path to Manliness. He is an author and also a podcaster. So welcome to the show, Ryan. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks, Zuby. I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
I am always blessed, man. Always. always good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that really sticks out about you, man. You're like always in a positive mood. You're always in an uplifting mood. And, you know, sometimes these musicians nowadays, that's becoming more uncommon. So it's always welcome.
Thank you very much, man. So I've done a very quick intro there, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about you, what you do, and what it is you're trying to do?
All right. So my name is Ryan Fellman, also known as Path to Manliness. And I wrote a book called Reclaim Your Manhood, and it is the young man's guide to straightening out their life. So basically all I did was I wrote out 20 very simple, easy to follow rules that if I could go back in time and give myself a quick little guide to straightening out my own life, this is the book I would give. So it's not like on the level of, say, like Jordan Peterson's 12 rules, but it's the same kind of concept, and it's gotten a pretty good reception. I've been surprised at how the Path to Manliness thing has kind of taken off. I created this Twitter account about a year ago, and I really had like almost no social media presence before that, but I was just kind of around with this, and it took off. And one thing that I've realized, and one thing you're completely aware of, is that there's definitely a market and a need for people that are just being outspoken in traditional male roles. People have become afraid to be outspoken, and they fear getting fired from their jobs. They fear, you know, becoming social outcasts, especially if you're like in the cities. And I just refuse to bow down to it. And I'm speaking my mind, and I think I've caught a groove with that.
Yeah. So a lot of guests I've had on this podcast from all different worlds and from all different worldviews have said that exact same thing. I was at a live event in London that I spoke at 2 weeks ago. Everybody in the audience said the same thing. People are afraid to voice their views, voice their opinions. They're scared of the repercussions. They're scared of mobs coming after them. So how have we got into this stage where 95% of the Western population is afraid to express their own genuine beliefs and opinions?
Yeah, that's the interesting question, isn't it? So part of it is, and it goes back to like the election where we had the silent majority and we had a lot of people that were just staying silent. And we've gotten ourselves into a position where social media and Silicon Valley have gotten so big and so powerful, they've been given the tools necessary to control the narrative. So you see these strange things like an 11-year-old boy dancing in the street and proclaiming that he's gay and whatever, and all these other, you know, unusual, unorthodox stances that people are taking are getting way more volume than they ever would have in the past, where they might have said something, you know, in their neighborhood, it had been, oh, that's that one guy, he's just a little different. Mm-hmm. And that'd have been the end of that. But with the internet and social media, they're able to leverage it to make it much louder. And there are definitely people that, for, I would say mostly financial reasons, but I think it goes even deeper than that, that are interested in trying to push this narrative. Mm. And it's, they're making it seem like it's more common than it is. And if you spend, sure, all your time online, it seems like a epidemic, but you go out in your neighborhood, unless you're living in San Francisco, I mean, you can't even find people.
Yeah. So where do you think that, here's a question. I mean, it's a question I've asked a few people who have, yeah, sort of said something similar. Is oftentimes we say this and we use the term they, and yeah, it's like, who are we even talking about? It's like, okay, you can tell somebody is pushing this. People are afraid of someone. They're saying, you know, I don't want them to come after me. They are pushing this. And it's one of those things that is really strange, because I mean, I've certainly come across actual individuals who are hardcore pushing this ideology, yeah, because they pop up in my mentions quite frequently. But you said that you think there's some financial incentive. What do you think the financial incentive is? Why don't you break that down?
You know, it's complicated. I think there's a lot of people that are making good amount of money that have these views. So your typical right wing conservative guy that's, you know, maybe he spends some money on some ammo or his car, but for whatever reason, they tend to be less easy to advertise to. I think part of it's revenue, but that's not entirely all of it. But the people that are more SJW types, more leaning to the left, progressive, whatever you want to call them, they're a lot easier to market to. I think part of that may be because a lot of them aren't having kids. Mm. So they've got significantly less expenses.
But don't they hate capitalism?
They hate capitalism, but capitalism always wins, right? Yeah. So they is an interesting thing to say. It's something about these left-leaning people, these progressives, they've got this response, and you can be a soda company, you can be selling hats, whatever it is. If you cater to them, they'll speak up for you and they'll promote you. And if you don't cater to them, they'll attack you. So it's almost like these drug cartels in Mexico. You're either with us or you're against us.
Yeah, I know it is. I call it like it's kind of like cyber terrorism.
Yeah, it really is.
It is. It's like a form of terrorism. Obviously not, you know, in most cases, not a violent form. But yeah, the fact that, you know, people are not being, you know, people always worry about censorship from a government. Yeah. But I'm like, censorship is not going to come from the government. It's going to come from companies or coworkers or, yeah, friends or even family in some cases, right? Forcing people to self-censor themselves. You know, you'll be in a room and people will have a certain opinion and someone else is like, no, actually, I strongly, you know, in their heart of hearts, they know they strongly disagree with whatever is being promoted or pushed or proposed, but they're so afraid of the repercussions that they just don't speak up. I mean, I've spoken, right, to people. It's amazing that some of the emails and DMs and even personal communications I've had with people, especially over the past year when I've become a lot more vocal about certain things online. And literally without fail, every day I'll get at least a few messages, sometimes from other musicians, sometimes from a lot from people who work in entertainment. So actors, musicians, singers, whatever. And then also people who work in like the publishing industry and writing and stuff like that. And then people who work in like actors and anything creative, really. It's amazing. I get so many people who are like, yeah, man, like please keep speaking up, because like so many of us are kind of quietly backing you. And in some ways, I'm kind of like, okay, cool, I'm chuffed. But another, I'm like, yo, don't leave me hanging out here to dry, man. Like don't let me be the only one.
Yeah, it's like that.
I'm like, say something. You know what I mean? Like, don't make me like the fall guy.
Like, oh, the bystander effect's a real thing. They, they're afraid to speak up. They're like, oh, somebody else will do it. Well, Zuby's got this for Zuby's me. Got right? I had the same thing. You know, I don't have quite the audience you do, but I still get a lot of people messaging me, email and DMs, and they're just saying like, hey, man, just keep doing what you're doing. And I'm like, I'm just saying simple things. Like, this isn't really anything extreme, but it's weird. We've come into this society, this world now where it's like extreme to say, you know, stay in shape, drink water, and you know, bust your ass and try to make money, like simple things, going for a run, like little things like that are becoming like more noteworthy than they ever have. Like, I never thought I was like anything special in any of these regards, but it's funny watching people that can be inspired by just like little acts. And you know, I went through a messy divorce a couple years ago, and it was like a wake-up call to me. You know, she had a lot of issues, a lot more serious issues than I did, like drug issues, and she was stealing money. But I was forced to like reflect on my own life too. And I'm like, all right, so I probably gained a few pounds and I was on path to becoming that fat guy. So I did a lot of things to change it. I lost like 30 pounds, started running Spartan races and ran a half marathon the other day. Just like that.
Good for you.
Thanks, man. But
Tell us a little bit more about your own personal story, man. We've kind of jumped straight into some of the meat. But tell me more about you.
Yeah, so that's kind of what jumpstarted this whole thing. So I got married to this girl that had like every red flag that you can think of. Looking back on it, it's easy to say, like, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was a different guy back then. I wasn't quite as confident. I wasn't as comfortable with myself. I was, you know, I was not terribly out of shape, but I was definitely not in shape. So I jumped in with this girl, and a few months into the marriage, I come to find out she's been stealing money from me to go buy drugs, and she's like bailing on all the responsibilities. And we try to kind of work through it for a little while, but like shortly after, she just didn't come home one night. I'm not an idiot. I knew things were just never going to be better. So that was the final straw. I'm like, all right, look, this is obviously just going to keep getting worse. I don't know where you were last night. I don't really care anymore. I'm done. Let's file the divorce. And, ended up being pretty messy. She used my son, our son then, I guess, as leverage to basically get more money out of me, which she did, and that's fine. But I got the son, so he's good. He's safe now, and he's happy. And met a new girl, so we've got our own kind of Brady Bunch family going on, and it's actually working out pretty good. But that was my catalyst to like waking up.
Before we get onto that, I mean, what was your story? What was your story before that? I mean, you obviously had a life before you got married. So what kind of led you down that line?
I was just, you know, enjoying life. I worked my ass off at work, but like outside of that, I didn't take anything too seriously. I was drinking a lot. I was playing video games at home. Nothing interesting. So I figured I did my 9 to 5. And after that, I'd earned my right to have my hedonistic pleasures. And, I didn't realize that these short-term pleasures were making me miserable long-term. And it took a while for me to grow up and figure that out. So that's a big part of what this book's about, is going back and trying to focus on more constructive habits. Now, I mean, I'm drinking a beer right now. I play games once in a while, but I've cut back on a lot of that. And I've learned to focus more on more constructive habits. So I did like a video game detox. I don't know. I never thought I was addicted, but I think the best way to see if you're addicted to something is to give it up. So I went like 500 days and I was like, yeah, whatever. And I lost interest in it. But what really got me interested was as I was going through this divorce, I had a lot of emotions, a lot of anger. I may have put one hole in a wall at my house, which, you know, at least it was a wall. But other than that, it was just a difficult time for me. So one of the assistants of my lawyer recommended that I should start journaling. And I was a good writer in school, but I didn't enjoy it. So went out, bought a notebook, started writing. And after about 6 months, I got this like full journal full of just random thoughts. Some of them were worthless. Some of them needed to be burned. some of them were kind of interesting. So I started writing and I started tweeting. And I kind of just fell into this by accident, but I was tweeting and I'm like, you know, I should make a website. And I had this clever name. It was actually a different name. It was Helm of Awesome. And Helm of Awe is like this Viking symbol. I'm actually wearing a shirt that's got it.
Oh, yeah.
It's called a Helm of Awe. And it's like a a sign of protection that the Vikings would wear back in the day. And I just thought it was a clever name. So I'm like, well, I'm going to snag this website since it's available. So I start writing and tweeting under it. And it was my earliest stuff, so it wasn't that great. Like, I thought it was okay at the time. Looking back on it, it's like, it's hard for me to even read it. But I ran into like a bit of a self-censor issue. I painted myself into a corner and I found myself not being able to say what I really wanted to say. And I was worried about alienating the people that already followed me, because I had about 1,000 people following me pretty quickly.
Okay.
So I go to create.
So why do you, when you say you painted yourself into a corner, in what way? What do you mean by that?
I wasn't quite as authentic in that.
Okay. Account. Okay. Gotcha.
I was leaning more towards like anti-consumerist thoughts, because I was just pissed off at society and everything after going through the divorce, and a lot of those sentiments have kind of faded since then.
Okay.
So I mean, I felt it at the time, but I couldn't portray it forever. And I create an alt account so I could be more outspoken and say the stuff that I wanted to say and not worry about alienating anybody. And I called it Path to Manliness. And it got awkward real quick when it started growing way faster than my regular account. But I just realized that, you know, that's what people wanted. They want that authenticity. And, you know, it's something everyone, I think, struggles with to some degree, that self-censorship, because you're just afraid of not just what other people think, but these Twitter mods. I mean, constantly am watching people getting suspended and censored and shadow banned, whatever. I don't know. I don't keep track of it.
I was going to say it's a weird one, because I mean, we all do and should self-censor ourselves to some degree, right? Because, you know, you don't just blurt out every single thought that comes into your brain. Otherwise, you're going to end up in trouble really quick. So it's kind of like it's a balancing act. It's like, okay, how much do I put out there, and why am I putting it out there as well? I know with me, like I often joke, man, dude, you guys should see the tweets that I write and then delete, because sometimes, you know, so I sometimes I kind of catch myself. I'm like, that
too far.
Just too far. Or is that constructive in some way? Like anytime I put something out there, I try to think, is there some value in it? Yeah. So that can be, value could be a lot of things. That could just be like some basic information. Value could be me promoting something, my music, my book, whatever, my podcast. Or value could be something funny, something that makes people laugh. It could be an interesting fact. It could just be an observation. It's like, you know, either entertainment or information. I always try to think, is this information or is it entertaining? And if it's neither, like if I can nail both, then I know it's a good tweet. If it's neither, then it's like, if it's neither and it could be come across a little bit, you know, inflammatory for no reason or whatever, that those are the ones that I tend to delete, because I'm like, no, that doesn't really, you know me, I don't mind kicking the hornet's nest multiple times per day. But even when I kick it, it's not done purely for the sake of getting a reaction. It's because I'm saying something that I think either is true or is funny or is both. And those are the things that people tend to respond to.
Yeah, I mean, if you start tweeting, it's interesting. Twitter's this great little like social experiment where you can kind of like learn what works and what people are interested in. And the outrageous stuff, the evocative stuff, does sell pretty well. So do the platitudes, which I don't mind those. I think they're constructive because, you know, I try to come across positive, but even I have my days where I'm just like not feeling it. And sometimes you just need somebody to say something simple, like be grateful for what you got and like look at how much worse somebody else has it. It's just a good reminder. You do need to hear that shit every day. I try to do the same thing. I was probably a little bit more negative when I first started just because I was fucking around a little bit. But I started taking it a lot more seriously when the messages started coming in where people were saying, hey, thanks. You've really done a lot to improve my life. You've helped me look at things better. And like, I didn't expect it. I thought what I was doing was somewhat helpful, but I never thought it would be like profound or interesting or anything like that. But it all changes when you start seeing people like sending those personal messages and buying your book and little things like that. And I do the same thing. I try not to add more noise to what's already out there. If I'm sending something, I want it to be helpful. And I don't like to attack people. I'd rather attack ideas, and I got the problem doing that.
Yeah, same with you. Exact same thing. I was actually saying, I don't think I've ever. I've been on Twitter for 10 years, so I don't want to say never, but I do not remember ever personally attacking somebody first.
Yeah.
Right. Like I've retaliated a couple of times, but even then, even when I do that, it's normally more like, look at how stupid this person is rather, you know, it's more like I tend to ridicule people rather than,
yeah,
you know, just come out with a outright insult or something like that. Even when they don't extend that same courtesy to me. And, you know, I've had some of those people who've come at me really viciously. And then 10 minutes later, they're tweeting apologies, not because they were forced to, but because I think people expect you to react the way they did.
Yeah.
So actually, if you can sort of take that higher ground and show that person's that grace and be kind of like, okay, this is stupid, but you know, I'll pray for you. Then it's disarming, right? It's kind of like, oh, like he didn't snap back at me in the way that I kind of wanted him to. He didn't, you know, like he didn't cuss at me. He didn't insult me or whatever. And I'd really try not to do that, especially because my profile's so public as well.
Yeah.
So even those interactions, I'm aware this is like a public interaction and other people are going to be seeing how I respond to this stuff, even if it's like some crazy thing that I'm responding to. So I find that that's a good way to sometimes convert people, or at least people say you can't change people's minds on Twitter or on social media. That's not actually true. You can. Some people are just locked into their thing and they'll be ready when they're ready. But other people, it's like, okay, you know, maybe this was just a misunderstanding and you've just reacted in a very emotional, immature way.
And you forget how many people are just silent on Twitter. You know, a lot of people that just like look through, they don't even like stuff. They may not even follow you, but they see you and you can impact them more so than anybody. Cause they're probably a little bit less indoctrinated in their thinking, where they're more open-minded. And you've positioned yourself and I don't know if you've expected this or not, but I mean, you're probably a role model to a lot of people. So I know I do. I'm sure you do take this somewhat seriously at times where you don't know what kind of impact you're going to have, especially on younger people.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, it's the same. I mean, of course, I'm a professional musician, you know, so as a rapper, that's something from the beginning, I've always bore in mind, you know. That's why from the start, I was like, okay, I want my overall message to be positive, to be inspirational. There's no profanity in my music. I've never rapped about, you know, any crazy stuff or anything I haven't done or anything like that. It's like, look, there's enough of that out there. That's not my life. That's not me. That's not what I'm trying to perpetuate in this world. So I'm just going to go and do the opposite. That's why I find it really, really funny how some people deem me this sort of somewhat controversial figure. Cause I'm like, you know, when it comes to rap, I'm like Will, I'm as controversial as Will Smith, you know? And that is like, it's like, I'm so uncontroversial. It's just like, I don't rap about politics even like very little, you know, it's just like,
well, they see certain headlines about you and they kind of make up their mind and they paint this image of you that suits their narrative.
Yeah. It's just funny though. Cause it's like, I mean, even on Twitter, I've had sometimes people like, oh, are you worried about like losing fans or what? I'm not. No, my fans don't care about this stuff. Like I've got like a lot of different audiences as well. So like my Twitter audience is very different from my gig audience or like my Facebook audience or whatever. There's obviously an overlap, but yeah, it's kind of different things. So if I end up getting in some discussion about some deep stuff about morality or politics or like, you know, ethical issues or whatever, like, that's kind of like a different crowd. So I kind of use Twitter Twitter's just kind of free for all for me, right? Like you get everything there. You get the music, you get the podcast, you get just my thoughts and views on different things, conversations. And then like Instagram, Facebook, that's more, it's not 100% music, but it's less edgy. It's less of a testing
more
ground.
Professional. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a different kind of audience too.
It's a different audience. Yeah. Even geographically, very different audiences. Like Facebook is primarily UK, Twitter is primarily US. So it's like, I'm literally talking to different people in different countries. If I'm trying to reach people in the USA, then Twitter and Instagram and the podcast are all primarily US. Facebook and I think YouTube as well are primarily UK. So I can kind of hit different people.
Well, YouTube hits based off like your location, which is interesting. So yeah, you're kind of stuck in there unless you want to move to the US, man.
Gosh, man, we'll see. I'm going to move somewhere in the next couple of years. I'm not sure 100% where yet, but we'll see.
I forget that you're British sometimes. I don't know what it is. The accent gets lost in the music, I think.
Yeah, I don't have a British accent. I mean, I didn't grow up in England.
Not really.
I didn't grow up here, so.
Okay.
No, it's okay. And English people don't think I'm English either. So, Yeah, no, like people, a lot of people think I'm Canadian. I think
really,
yeah, because I guess my accent is somewhere between American and with a touch of British. So I think a lot of people guess Canadian. A lot of people just think, most people just think I'm American.
Yeah.
And I think my attitude is more American than it is British as well.
Yeah, the British, if that makes sense. At least from my perception, they seem to be a little bit more reserved than us Americans. We're too brash. We're too aggressive. Wearing flags on our heads. And
yeah, that's true. Actually, you, if someone had a Union Jack version of what you're wearing on your head, people would be looking at them like they think you're like a football hooligan or something.
Yeah. That's too bad. It's a good looking flag too. You guys should start wearing that.
I don't know, man. Some people think that waving the flag is racist or something these days. So
yeah, it's offensive. Yeah, even Angela Merkel doesn't like the German flag.
It's all very weird. But yeah,
it is weird.
it's all very weird.
I think it goes both ways though. Like when I see it, like on the trucks driving by, I think it's kind of weird when people have the flags like hanging off their truck. It's kind of cool, but it's also that's a bit much. And then. But like not being proud of it, that's also weird. I mean, like, come on, you're from there. Like, be proud of it. And just because you're proud of America doesn't mean you hate the other countries.
No, you know? I mean, it's silly. I mean, there's you wouldn't go to any other country and, you know, you see their flag and you think that this is some sort of attack on anybody. If you go to Romania and you see Romanian flags, you're not like, oh my gosh, what are they doing? It's just like, well, you're in Romania, you know, you're in Spain, you're in Italy, you're in Nigeria. Yeah. Like, you're going to see the flag.
Yeah. It's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
You go to the Olympics, they're all there. They all get along just fine.
Exactly, man. It's healthy. They're all, you know, their kit is designed in their colors. It's cool, man. Yeah. It's good.
It is.
It's good, man. Yeah. I don't know why people would want this kind of complete hodgepodge of just everyone. I don't know. There's this a bit like what we were touching on earlier. You know, it seems like there's people who want like everything and everyone to be. I don't know. There are so many hypocrisies in these philosophies because it's like you're trying to make everybody the same whilst also like really massively highlighting the differences and the differences that don't matter that much as well. Like not even like the good difference. It's very odd. It's like, okay, well, you're kind of blurring the line between male and female. And then you're blurring the line between like countries and even here in the UK, right? You've got the whole thing going on obviously with Brexit, and there's a lot of talk about European, you know, I don't know, kind of Europeanism versus nationalism. So you've got certain countries where, you know, they're much more like we're in Europe, but you know, we want our own thing as well. And then you've got other people who are kind of like, no, like we should just become like a United States of Europe sort of thing. And then you've got other people pushing back against that. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's weird to me because I guess, you know, if I go to a different country, I travel a lot. I've been to like 30 something countries. But if I go to a country, I go there because I don't want it to just be like where I live.
Yeah.
If I went to Japan and it was just the same, it was just exactly the same as the UK and the same people, and so I'd feel like shortchanged. I'd be like, wait, I came to Japan. Yeah. I want a little bit of.
It's like when you go to a Mexican restaurant and your friend tries to order a cheeseburger. It's like, dude, we're at the Mexican place. Just where you get the tacos. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah,
get some carnitas.
Yeah, man.
But like, I know what you're saying. Like, there is it's interesting. Like, the United States of Europe idea is unique, but like, we've got the same issues over here, but we're allowed to kind of have our own different little quirks. Like, you can go to Utah and you got the Mormons over there. You can go to Nevada and gambling and prostitution's okay. Then you can go to Florida and all bets are off. You know, like every state's got its own little like quirks. You
what's
know?
The so, Florida? What's the Florida man done today?
Oh God, I don't know. Something with an alligator. I haven't seen anything on it yet. Too busy doing actual work.
Today's episode of Real Talk with Zuby is brought to you by our sponsors, OZ Lifestyle Brands. OZ Lifestyle Brands care a lot about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both casual and classic designs. They also make shopping really easy for you. You can just go check out their website, ozlifestylebrands.com. They've got a fantastic selection of watches, wallets, t-shirts, and other accessories, especially designed for men with ultra-discerning tastes. OZ is for men who have found their calling but don't feel the need to shout about it. So I recommend you go check out their full range of products over at ozlifestylebrands.com. To let them know that I sent you and to get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout. That is Zuby Music, Z-U-B-Y Music, at checkout to get 20% off your entire order at OZLifestyleBrands.com. OZLifestyleBrands.com. Go check them out.
You know, I don't like read the news anymore. I live in Cleveland, Tennessee, and I saw there was an earthquake in Cleveland on my phone, but I couldn't open the link. So I had to go to the news site to go see if there was an actual earthquake near my town. But it was the other Cleveland.
Okay. I didn't even know that there was a Cleveland in Tennessee.
I didn't either until like 3 years ago. there's not much there. I'm out in the middle of nowhere.
Enough. No, fair enough, man.
But yeah, I don't look at the news. I haven't really like checked it in like over a year, and like I don't see how it's hurting my life at all. In fact, I feel more at ease.
I get it from Twitter.
Yeah, I like Twitter. Honestly,
I get my news from Twitter. Like I don't even have a TV in my house.
Really?
I couldn't watch TV even if I wanted to. Like I don't have a TV and I haven't for years. So yeah, no, I get my I feel like I stay very well updated. But yeah, it's mainly so yeah, social media, Twitter, YouTube. Like I can see on any given day, it's like, okay, what's today's outrage? What's the random nonsense that people are like you kind of have the real news and then you have like the outrage news. The outrage news gets more coverage, even though it's like always something stupid. And then you've got, oh, really, there's some real stuff. Oh, there was a earthquake. Oh, there was a hurricane somewhere. Like it's really weird how what people, I don't want to say choose because I don't think people choose. It's really interesting what gets people's attention and what creates people's outrage.
Well, a lot of people are like not in control of their emotions. Mm. So they see this, that scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker's talking about how like a truckload of soldiers gets killed in Iraq. And it's like, that happens. We're not shocked by that. But like when it's a school shooting, they freak out because that upsets their world and it's more shocking. So it's when these emotional events come in and they've learned to play into people's emotions with these weird social stories about some kid doing whatever and how they got drag queens now doing book readings. And it's like, man, I used to be all about that. Let your freak flag fly, but like, let's keep the kids out of it. At least.
I'm with you completely on that. Literally, like I've got a couple of lines. Where and one of them is like anything to do with children that potentially can impact them negatively. Like I don't even have kids. I've got a whole bunch of nieces and nephews, so maybe I'm like more sensitive to it now than I used to be. But always I've just been like, look, adults, my general rule is like, look, adults, consenting adults, do what you want as long as you're not hurting, harming, maiming, killing another human being. It doesn't mean I approve of it all, but just like I wouldn't want other people enforcing all their beliefs and regulations on me, I wouldn't want to do that to other people. But when it comes to kids or, you know, hurt stuff that hurts other people, like physically hurts, I don't mean like saying something mean, but you know, but even then, you know, like just life isn't that hard, man. Just treat people decently and it tends to go all right, you know. Just don't be an a-hole, work hard, and most 95% of the time it'll work out okay in the long run.
And then don't sweat the small stuff. You know, like there's so many little things you can get upset about. This wasn't necessarily small, but I had to pay the IRS a pretty significant amount of money. We'll just say it was about a month of my salary. We'll say that because I made a mistake last year. It involved my alimony. So it was tax on money that I didn't even get to keep.
Yeah.
And I'm upset about it. I'm kind of annoyed. And then I see, I think it was Tanner Guzzi. He had a friend on Twitter. He was talking about that got into like a car accident. His wife got killed and he got paralyzed. Wow. And I'm like, all right, I came out okay.
Man, yeah. Reframing.
Yeah, exactly.
Always reframing, man. It's
hard to explain to people, but just as you get older, you start kind of like understanding it better. Because I remember like little things would like set me off when I was younger. And the more that stuff happens to you, you just kind of start getting like used to it. It's like, whatever. Sun's coming up tomorrow. My family's healthy. Life's good.
Mm. Why do you think it is that some people never reach that stage?
That stage of enlightenment?
Yeah. I feel like I hit it. I feel like I reached it like in my, probably before I was even a teenager. But it seems like, you know, there's all these grown adults who can't seem to work that thing out, even though it seems quite apparent.
All right, so I say this a lot on Twitter. I'll get to flesh it out now since it's a podcast, which is why I love podcasts. So society is too soft. I say that all the time, but 280 characters doesn't really flesh it out. So most people grow up too good and they don't have like legit issues. I grew up with a pretty easy life. My parents were not necessarily wealthy, but we went out to eat whenever we wanted. We didn't have to worry about bills so much. We all had nice cars, you know, American cars. We weren't driving around Rolls Royce or anything, but
yeah.
But life was good. Most people never have that like moment of adversity that kind of frames everything into perspective. So that same year that I went through the divorce, you know, I lose like $250,000 over a few years. I lose my wife. I lose this whole perspective of like trying to have a not perfect life, but I'm trying to go after that American dream of getting married and having kids. And now it's all like messy. I also started going blind and
blind.
Yeah. I had a retinal detachment. So
I'm
sitting there one day and I felt like a shade's coming down my eye. I couldn't really figure it out. I thought I had a weird contact or I just slept funny or something. So I just ignored it. Next day it's worse. And I'm like freaking out. I'm like, all right, is this not going to get better? I don't know what to do. So I went to a eye doctor like an hour later. I was having surgery like 3 days from then.
Oh, wow.
So this is unusual for younger people, but I had a retinal detachment in both eyes.
And nothing caused it? Just random?
They kept asking me if there was like a head injury, but yeah. I mean, I played football in high school, but since then, nothing notable, no like bar fights or anything like that. Yeah, yeah. It's genetic though. Like my mom had it and I have like remarkably terrible vision without my contacts. So that plays into it a little bit. Mm. But yeah, people that don't have glasses and contacts are like, oh, I don't have to go to the eye doctor. I'm like, yeah, there's other reasons to go. Like, goes wrong sometimes. So I caught it pretty early. Like one of my eyes is perfect. My other one's a little less than perfect. I've actually got a little bit of a blind spot, which I don't notice it too much, although I was sparring the other day and I got popped in the nose by this girl and I literally never saw it. She's like, I'm so sorry, I thought you're gonna block it. I'm like, you're good. I don't tell anyone this. I don't want them to know there's a blind spot. So but yeah, you know, you go through these moments like that. It reframes everything. Mm. And the next time you get into like a car accident or something that seems serious happens, it just kind of reminds you. It's like, I've been through worse.
Yeah, man.
But so most people are fortunate. They don't have to go through that moment.
Yeah, man. So tell us a little bit more about the book that you wrote. What's it all about?
Yeah, Reclaim Your Manhood. It's just 20 rules of...
After my female deadlift, I think I might need to do that.
I don't think I could break that record, so I'm impressed. The first one's hit the gym, so you got that one covered.
Okay, good.
But yeah, it's simple things, and it's not a long book, because I know guys in general don't like to read, so there's nothing stopping a guy from picking this book up. And
I love reading. Maybe I am a woman.
I like to read. Nothing wrong with being a little feminine once in a while. Yeah. I get it all the time on Twitter, like, oh, you're so manly and all this. I'm like, I'm not even the like most manly guy out there. That's just the name, but it makes you a target.
So what are the others? You said going to the gym. There's got to be more than.
Yeah, writing is a big one.
Okay.
It sounds silly and it sounds worthless, but it really focuses your life when you start writing. And the other thing that a lot of people struggle with, I definitely struggle with, is I lose perspective. So I'll be working towards something, and I feel like I'm just not getting any better, and it's moving too slow. And I'm looking at day to day, you know, you don't see the changes that are happening every couple of days. Mm-hmm. But then when you go back 6 months later and read what you were struggling with, it's like paradigm shifting, where you realize how much progress you've made and how much your problems that you were dealing with then, they're no longer an issue. You've elevated yourself so much beyond them, but you forget this stuff. You know, you forget all the little victories.
Yeah.
This isn't in the book, but this is another thing I do. I've got a note in my phone that's just 2019 accomplishments. And whenever I have something kind of noticeable, something worthy happen, you know, maybe it's this, saying I was on Zuby's podcast, I'll write that down. And then like, when you look at it, like over the course of a year, like it's only halfway through the year.
I really like that. I really like that idea. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah. I forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, you forget about these little things and you add them all up and it's like, it's been a pretty good year. And then it motivates you to do too.
Yeah. Cause I've bossed it this year. So I should have been doing that. Yeah. I mean, I went back to my tweet from January 1 just yesterday. And I mean, I've already accomplished most of my New Year's resolutions, which were to achieve by the end of the year. Like one of them was like 30,000 Twitter followers. Like I've now got 66,000. One of them was like, start a podcast and release 30 episodes.
There you go.
This is about the 50th one that I'm recording already, and we're not even halfway through the year.
I'm impressed. You're hammering them out like fast.
Thanks, man.
I was like trying to catch up on them. I'm like, I don't think it's fast enough to listen to them all.
Yeah. But what I need is I've actually gone back down to one a week.
Yeah.
But I want to do more. I want to do more a week. It's just the editing process. Like once I can get somebody else to edit it, then I can go full speed ahead. Yeah. But there were loads of those goals I saw, you know, in terms, even some of them, like making money online goals. Cause this year I was like, all right, I want to shift stuff to, you know, being able to make money online. But then, yeah, with going viral and releasing the ebook and selling merchandise and all that, it's like, cool. Like I had a goal to hit X amount per month for 3 months in a row. And it's like, awesome. I did that April, May, June, bang, done. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah. I'm having the same issue. I tend to undersell myself, I guess. So I wanted 8,000 Twitter followers by the end of the year and I'm at 10,000 now.
How many did you have at the start?
Like 4,000.
That's a good look. Yeah. Man.
I just started the account like about a year ago.
Yeah, man. No, man, you'll be just keep going, man. It snowballs a little as well. Yeah, it grows in surges. Like you'll just get something that just like it just will go hard for a couple of days and then it'll calm down. And
yeah, I've noticed that too. There's just little things you do and people they start noticing you. Yeah. The other thing I've noticed is people just they don't see everything. There's a lot of noise out there. It took me a long time to figure this out, but like when I was selling my books, this Reclaiming Manhood book, it didn't sell that well for the first like 6 months. It sold pretty well the first month, but then it didn't. And this guy named Jose Rosado.
He's really good
at copywriting and selling.
Shout out to Jose. I know Jose's changing lives out here, man.
He helped me out a lot, you know, and I mentioned to him one time, like my book's not selling that well. It did for a while. And he goes, well, are you promoting it a lot? I go, you know, I'm not promoting as much as I used to. And he goes, and your sales are down. That's funny. I'm like, yeah, it is funny. So I found this one tweet that just kind of clicks. And I sent it out one day and it sold like 10 copies in a day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that works. So I just copy pasted it onto this app that I use. And now it goes out once a month and once a month. Big hit of sales every single month. So, you know, people don't notice everything. There's too much noise. So
a lot of noise out there.
If you're selling yourself or something, you're probably not doing it enough. Yeah. It's awkward.
You know, it's funny because
he's a shy guy.
It's funny because you got to think like, I mean, if you think of like how much a company like Coca-Cola or Nike or Pepsi, it's like this brand has existed for like decades. Everybody already knows Coca-Cola exists, but they still advertise as if you've never come across them. You've never tasted their beverage.
Yep.
And it's like, gosh, okay, if Coca-Cola is not advertising, if Coca-Cola is not over advertising, what on earth makes any of us think that we are over advertising, right?
Exactly.
On a global basis, they're on social media, billboards, television, sports teams. It's just like every day.
They nail it. Yeah, and it's not even about like letting people know it's there. It's just reminding them like, hey, you're thirsty, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, like I'm not a big soda drinker, so that doesn't work for me. But the beers, every once in a while, and it's not usually the commercials, but like in movies or TV shows, I see like people just chilling at a bar, and I'm like, yeah, it'd be nice to stop writing for a little bit and just go have a beer and chill out.
that's one thing I've never been able to drink, man.
Really?
Nah.
I need to stop doing it because that's like the one thing keeping me from like being like really cut. Like, you know, like everyone's like, oh, you just need to eat better. I eat okay.
Yeah.
Just drink a few beers every once in a while. And
no joke. I think I've drunk I've probably drunk one beer in my life.
Wow.
That's like if I were to add up all the beer I've drunk, I think it would probably come to one bottle.
Wow. That's crazy. I don't drink it. I'm not the guy that will buy like a case of Bud Light and pound it over the weekend, but like I'll buy like a nice beer. I'm drinking a Sweetwater 420 Mango Kush. They brew it with hemp and like
I was gonna say
the thing up. It smells like straight up dank.
Oh, really? I was like, that's a heck of a name for a beer right there.
I saw it at a local bar the other day. And I just walked in and somebody already poured one out. I started like going, so someone in the bathroom? What's going on? And the bartender knew me. He's like laughing. He goes, come here, I'll show you.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
But
yeah, it's funny. As a kid, both beer and coffee, people always said that, oh, when you're older, you'll like it. When it's like, you know, I got to 20, I was like, still don't like it. Got to 25, I was like, still don't like it. You know, still don't like those. Yeah, so
I'm not
coffee and beer,
I mean, I'm not sold that people like coffee to begin with. Like most people are putting so much sugar and fattening stuff in their coffee. It's like, do you really like coffee or do you just want the sweeteners with it? Like, you're not even drinking this. I'll drink a black coffee. But it's bitter. It's an acquired taste. I don't actually drink it that often. I just wake up and go.
Yeah, man.
My coffee cup is just getting on the exercise bike or going for a jog, something like that.
So what's next for you, man? What's the plan? What's the big goal?
big goal. I've got another book coming out. I've had a couple ebooks, but they're smaller. They're important and they can help in a lot of ways. One's how to grow a better Twitter following. One's more about like making money online. But I've got another one. It's more of a sequel to Reclaim Your Manhood. It's called How to Adopt the Warrior Mindset. And that one's going to be more significant, a bigger book. And then like on a more personal level, I'm doing my second Spartan race here in about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I ran my first one last year, and that was another one of those like paradigm shifting moments for me where I talk about this a lot. You gotta put yourself out there and challenge yourself. It's another chapter in the book. And I had a group of guys come up to me, or a guy and his wife. They wanted to do the Spartan race, and they asked me to join. At the time, I was like 20, 30 pounds heavier and not in the best shape. And they're like, "Hey, we're going to do a Spartan race. You should join." I'm like, "Nah, I can't do that." Yeah. And they're like, "Well, yeah, you can, because we're going to train." And you know, I kind of like took it personally as like a challenge. I'm like, "All right, yeah, I'll join."
Okay.
So there were so many things that were just impossible in my mind. Like I couldn't run the Spartan race. I couldn't climb a rope. And by, you know, applying myself and actually like focusing and working towards all this stuff, I did this. You know, I accomplished the Spartan race. I climbed a rope. I climbed like a, I don't know, like a 90-foot cliff on this like cargo net thing.
Okay.
And I mean, like no support, nothing. Like if I fall, like I don't know if I would have died, but it'd been rough. And like I'm petrified of heights. So okay. Getting through all that was a huge, huge turning point. And then once you start knocking out like one or two things that are impossible in your mind, it changes your mind on everything else. It's like, all right, I could probably write a book. All right, I can probably start a podcast. Why not?
Yeah,
you know, I just got to figure out how to do it. You know,
that's good. That's good, man. I mean, it's picking up all these skills. I mean, it's the same thing I've done. Like, I wanted to start this podcast last year, but I didn't know what direction I wanted to take in it. I thought, do I want to do just a pure music podcast? Do I want to do like a one just interviewing entrepreneurs and business and stuff? And then eventually, I was like, you know what? Like, I want to do all of those. So let me just keep it wide open. Anybody who's interesting, who's got a fascinating story, who's got a unique perspective, unique ideas, let's just have like a forum for open discussions. You know, I don't like to over plan them and have it like a strict interview where I've got this list of questions. It's like, oh, let's just sit down with the interesting people and I know how to have conversations. So let's just talk and see where things go.
That's how I'm at with it. I used to start with a list, and sometimes I'd like actually go through the list. But like, I did one with Chance Lunsford. You did a podcast with him recently, and I had a list of questions I wanted to ask him, and we just started talking because like, we've like become friends. And I looked down at my list when I got done. I'm like, I asked him one out of these like 20 questions. Like, I don't even know why I'm bothering with this anymore. So I don't do the list anymore. I might do like a few because sometimes you get stuck and you have a moment of a little lull in the conversation. It's good for that, but the natural conversations where it's at. So I did the same thing. I started the podcast. I didn't know what kind of direction I wanted to go. And I waited a few months and I just kept thinking and thinking, and I didn't figure it out when I launched. I just launched it. But I've realized since then, I don't really care how many people listen or how many people decide to sponsor it or anything like that. I really enjoy talking to these interesting people, and by having a podcast, they want to talk to you and you get to talk to them. And that's the part I enjoy. So whether it makes money or doesn't, gets me attention, I don't know. I just enjoy doing it.
Nothing wrong with that, man.
Yeah, man. A couple of years ago, I never would have thought I'd be talking to somebody like Zuby. So it's fun.
You probably didn't know someone like Zuby existed.
I didn't, but I do thanks to this corner of Twitter.
Man, I'm in like 10 different corners of Twitter. That's the weirdest thing of my account. Like, I'm at this intersection between like hyper political Twitter and like music Twitter and like hip hop Twitter and then like self-improvement Twitter and business Twitter. And it's so weird. I mean, I'm followed, like sometimes I look at who follows me and I'm really intrigued. I'm followed by a lot of like professional sportsmen.
And
And then like a lot of politicians. Like I'm followed by a lot of politicians and journalists.
You become politically relevant. So
yeah, and like academics. I mean, I'm followed by the most of the so-called intellectual dark web. So, you know, like lots of like professors and it's interesting. It's just kind of weird, but it's cool. It's cool. Like I like that. It's kind of like, you know what? No one else in my arena. There's not another rapper who is crossing these kind of boundaries and cross-pollinating audiences in this kind of way. So it's different. It's weird, but I'm just like, you know what, I'm just going to see where it takes me. I'm not going to steer the ship too hard. I'm just going to kind of connect with all these people, keep doing what I'm doing, keep putting the messages out there, keep putting music and creative content out there, and we'll see where it all ends up. You know, hopefully one day it'll be like a big media empire or something.
Hey man, it could happen. I mean,
no, that's what I'm aiming for. I mean, I've started viewing myself as a media company.
I like that.
Yeah, that's how I look at it now. So like, you know, video, music, podcasts, just looking at like, okay, like I'm a creator and I'm essentially a small, not, you know, a big media company. I'm just kind of like a one man media company. And that's how things are happening now. I mean, you've got people who are one single YouTuber who's there making videos in their bedroom and whatever. And, you know, someone like a Tim Pool or whatever, and he can be a more trusted news source. I trust him more, that individual more as a news source than I do like some of these huge corporations with billions and billions of pounds and dollars, which is, it's just amazing.
We went too far. Everything kept getting bigger and bigger, and it got faceless to the point where it's like, I don't even know what that is anymore. Like, what even is Coca-Cola? You forget that there's actually people involved in it, and there are. But like, it's lost its humanity.
That's true. There's no face for Coca-Cola, is there?
No, there's not.
I don't even know who owns it. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think Nike, I think of Jordan because I'm 31, but I mean, really, it's LeBron now, but maybe it's not even him anymore. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I really don't. I've lost touch of sports. The only sport I follow anymore is the UFC. I've got.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that's the one reason I have a TV. Oh, fair enough, man. If it weren't for that, I wouldn't have one. But it's interesting. That whole media idea is really big, and I didn't know exactly where I was going with it, and I still kind of don't at times, although I have visions. But I think if you have any interest in reaching people, I think it's worth creating some sort of a personal brand. And maybe it's only 100 people, but it's definitely worth doing.
It's becoming increasingly important. I mean, I just look at it. Look, that's the way the world. That's the way the world. Yep. Well, the world is already there. But it's
in its infancy.
Yeah,
most
but it's
people the, are unaware of it.
Yeah, but it's the way the world is going, and the people who are going to have gigantic leverage in 5, 10, 15 years, it's going to be those people who have those personal brands and who are their own little media outlets, whether they're Instagram or YouTube influencers, or they're podcasters, or they're independent journalists, or just, you know, content creators or whatever. I think those people are going to be, in the future, that's really going to be where the power, the influence, even the money is going to be like, because companies are latching onto it, right? Companies are starting to see, oh, rather than putting up a big billboard, why don't we talk to these 100 YouTubers or Instagrammers for the same amount of money and get them to, you know, post about our new t-shirt or our new lipstick or whatever. And that's going to convert better than paying huge amounts of money for like a television ad, which people might not watch and isn't very well targeted. And so billions and billions of advertising dollars are shifting over to influencer marketing every year. And I don't know if you're aware, I mean, it's predicted that. So right now, let me remember the stat. Right now there's about 4 billion people online, about 4 billion, which is something like 55-60% of the world's population.
Yeah.
In 2030, it's predicted to be 90% of the world's population. I think it's going to be about 8 billion people by 2030. That's the prediction, which is going to be like, 90% of the world's population.
It's amazing.
So it's going to, because we've already kind of had this revolution in the West, but people need to remember this is going to happen again in the African countries and lots of the Asian countries, South America, like all these places that don't yet have, you know, 4G and 5G and high speed fiber optic broadband and all that kind of stuff. Like that whole world, like all these millions, billions of people are also going to be coming onto online and social media and all that in full effect. And that is something which, if you're aware of, I think people should be thinking, okay, how do I position myself so that I can take advantage of that in some way, right? Because that's going to be huge. Just like imagine if you could go back to 2008 and you knew all of this stuff was going to be where it is now, right? You could have just capitalized, you know, just done the land grab, bought the land really cheap, you know, just like people who bought land when it was like super duper cheap. And then you're like now sitting on this property and it's like, man, you could have, those people who were like on YouTube in 2009 and 2010 going hard, or who started their podcasts in 2010, it's like, man, they're now just out of this world. Yeah.
Well, so many people start and they don't persist, you know, and it takes a while to build it up. Sometimes it takes a long time. I got lucky in so many ways. Like, I had the stupidest tweet take off on my first day.
Oh, really?
I used to talk more like political crap. Mm. And I made some comparison between Tammy Lauren and Megyn Kelly, talking about how, like, you know, people want a younger, more traditional, more attractive woman, not this old, bitter Megyn Kelly or whatever. And like, I had a very unflattering picture of her and a good one of Tammy Lauren.
Yeah.
And I put like no effort into it. I actually misspelled both their names and people were making fun of me about it, but that just gets you more attention. And I remember running in town. I don't know if I was going to the gym or what, but I'm just sitting there with my phone while I'm driving, and the music kept getting interrupted because it's constantly dinging these Twitter notifications.
Oh, okay.
I hadn't turned them off yet. I'm like, what is going on? And I looked down, like, after I drove for like an hour or half an hour or whatever it was. I'm like, I got like 30 new followers. That's weird. And it ended up getting like retweeted like 200, 300 times on this brand new account. I had like 100 followers by the end of the day. I'm like, but like, people love that like outrage. And nonsense.
Yeah, it's weird. Sometimes it's like I have to, because I've been on Twitter for so long, I can kind of predict when something is going to go viral.
Yeah,
like I can tell. And sometimes I won't tweet something at a certain time because I haven't got the time capacity to deal with the fallout. Right. Yeah. So it's like I have to be ready for it. It's like, okay, today I'm going to tweet this thing, and I know it's going to.
I do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because
my morning's the heavy hitters, and the afternoon like fluff.
Yeah, and with me, like I save the most juicy ones for later in the day because I know that's when, like, I wait for the Americans to wake up.
Yeah,
right. Because my morning, it's like, you know, it'll be like 2 a.m. where you are or whatever. So it's like, okay, now let me hold fire on that one.
I don't sleep well, so like I'll wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning sometimes. I'll get on Twitter and like see the European side of Twitter. Yeah. So much more chill. I love it.
Yeah, you're up to it, man.
It's very awesome, different.
Bro. Yeah, it is. It is. It's people are still shouty. People are still angry, but it's slightly different stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this whole like branding thing, it's so funny. But like, a lot of people just give up too early. And if you just stick with it, it would take off. You know. Yeah,
it's like that with everything.
Yeah, I got lucky with mine, but like I kept doing it. You know, and. You know, like people ask all the time, hey, how do I grow my Twitter account? Like, well, first off, are you tweeting every day? No. Well, let's start there.
I need to write that book.
Yeah, right?
that's a book waiting. Book. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. That's a book waiting for me to be written.
Hard to write. I mean, once you've done it, you know.
Awesome, man. I'm looking at the time. We're coming up to an hour right now. So why don't you let people know where they can find you online?
All right, so I'm easy. I got the same brand everywhere. It's Path to Manliness. So I'm most active on Twitter. I do have a website, pathtomanliness.com, and I post on there fairly regularly. And then I've got a couple books. Reclaim Your Manhood. It's on Amazon. The ebook is $5. So start with that one. And you know, if you want something more specific, you can DM me. I actually do respond to most of my messages, probably all of them. Unless you're being trollish, which that's been shocking to me, is most people have been more positive. I expected more flack. And I would say like 90-95% of my messages are like positive. It's great.
Yeah, they should be.
Yeah. And then I've got a podcast too. It's Path to Manliness. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, all sorts of stuff. So, yeah.
Awesome. Ryan, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's been really good to talk to you, man.
Thanks, Zuby. It's great getting to know you a little better.
No doubt. Bro. Have a good day.
Yeah, hey, you too, man.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.